Thank you, Alexis. And you did great. Now, if you think she doesn't, well, then how about one of you coming up here and singing, huh? She has courage. And she stayed with it. Did you notice that? Now, that's something. When you make a little mistake, you don't just run and sit down. Now, I had a young girl, an Ambassador Coed, years ago. We were at the Peace of Tabernacles, and she was playing a difficult piece on the piano and was doing very well, and she came to a point that she couldn't remember, and she ran from the stage. She didn't stay with it. But you see, it pays to stay with something, and you did. You're a fine young lady. I appreciate you. So you've broken the ice now. It's what we always call the Spokesman Club. The first speech was always breaking the ice. Breaking the ice. So you just broke the ice. I had a note from Mr. Musso and wanted to express their that they wish us a very happy last day of the days of unleavened bread. And so we're very happy to, so far, that we're able to work together and all. And I trust that Satan won't do something to create a division between us. But anyway, so far everything is fine, and we appreciate the blessing. And they really appreciate the fact that here's Angie and Lenny and Angie both are using the translator on the internet to communicate with family there. I think it's the daughter of Mr. Musso. And now, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, M-U-S-S-O, because, you know, the French have a way, just like in Texas, you'd call the name of Rogers, you'd call it Rogers. But in Louisiana, it's called Roger. So that gives you a little bit of... So until I talk to him, I really won't know how to pronounce his name. So in the meantime, I'll just say Mr. Musso or Mr. Musso, however, I don't know. Anyway, seemed like a very fine man. He was there with the meeting where we had with Mr. Carrion and his son-in-law, Reese Ellis. We went there a few years ago, but I just can't pull him up in my mind at that time, although we have pictures of them now. So anyway, they're very, very happy about Lenny and Angie communicating with them. So any of you want to dabble into it a little bit, that's up to you. I want to touch on a couple of points that Ed brought out. There is not a thing wrong with saying a happy Sabbath. Now, maybe what he was saying on the other, I don't know. But anyway, there's not a thing wrong with that, and I would hope that you'd feel free to always say happy Sabbath. I hope you have a great Sabbath, a beautiful Sabbath, and so on. The other thing, I would not recommend the book of Gerald Flores. Satan has a trap. I've seen him work this over the years. He does it with a person, or he does it with a book, or whatever. They'll have a lot of truth in the beginning, and then it begins to lead you subtly into another direction. So, sorry, Ed, I can't agree with you on your recommendation. Maybe there are some people who can handle it, but I wouldn't recommend it. I don't want to read it myself. I don't want to read it myself. And so a couple of the other areas I'll be touching on in my sermon. Well, brethren, once again, we've come to the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. As members of God's church, some for many years, we should well know it would obey the command from God to refrain from eating any leavened bread or products during these 7 days, and I'm quite sure that all of you have refrained from doing that. And sometimes it's tempting to get around to certain situations, but anyway, we manage to stay away. Exodus the 12th chapter and verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have, as it is the Hebrew linear Bible, on the first day you shall have, because it should be past tense, remove leavening from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day, the seventh bread, that person shall be cut off from Israel. I mentioned about, as members of God's church, some for many years, this is talking to Mr. Fields before services, Said he couldn't sleep getting up this morning. So he started going back in his mind and he counting all the elders and the deacons that he had known in previous years in the Modesto church area. Came up with about 25. This is before I began to pastor Modesto. And Jerry, as far as I know, he's the only survivor from all those deacons and the elders. He's the only survivor. He and his wife, Pam. And Jamie. So that's just fantastic. That's great to see that. And, you know, this is the way that it is. And we're in a terrible time of trial and testing. And so many people, they just can't handle it. They just, for one reason or the other, they go in a different direction. Oftentimes, directions that are attractive and a way that seems right. And then off they go. But I think it's just absolutely great that the Fields family, they just hung in there, and that's just really great, and that's very good. That's like we're talking about Alexis, you know, made a mistake. Well, she kept hanging in there, so do we. I make my mistakes. Peter makes his mistakes, and so do Jerry and Joe. All of us, we make our mistakes up here. But I think back to the years we had a professor at Ambassador College who said he was a genius in the English language. He taught English. He was a genius. He understood every facet of the English language. And so during the summer when all the faculty members were not teaching and out in the field, well, he attended one of the churches. This is back in the 50s. And he was calling me later on how many errors the minister made in his sermon in the English language. And Mr. Armstrong said, you know, that man would be far better off if he were to be focusing on more of what he's hearing rather than how he is hearing it. And that's the whole point. I remember one of the men that we had in the Spokesman Club in Big Sandy, Texas. He was a young black man. He and his sister, they attended the church there in Longview, Texas. And now they had come from poor, very poor beginnings. They didn't even know how old they were. They came up in such bad situations. They were eating out of garbage cans or whatever else in the beginning. But Glenn, as his name was, and he would give a speech. His English was terrible. But he had his heart in it. Everything he said, he just spoke with his heart in it. And, you know, he won the trophy. I don't know how many times, just because of the way he came across. I know one, he said, it just wasn't feeling good. I said, Glenn, you don't have to give the speech. No, I won't give it. And so later on, he was hired at the Ambassador College and was moved to Pasadena working with the cooks. So he was just a real fine man. But I mentioned the fact of how it's a matter of really what comes from here and what is being said in truth is what really counts. Yeah, it may be an error in the pronunciation, not pronunciation, but pronunciation. I don't know how many times I've been the director of Spokesman Club for years. Now, how many times I've had to make that correction with the men. But, you know, there we were supposed to be looking for the wrong errors as a. And I still remember Mr. Waterhouse was saying, in a way, he said, I want to be corrected here because I don't want to make mistakes when I get out there. And so that was one of the purposes of the Ambassador Club, to help us through those things. Well, I didn't mean to get it off and all that, but it just sort of led one thing to the other. But God's command is that we are to daily eat only the unleavened bread or unleavened products, and both are intended to teach us invaluable lessons in this life journey across our spiritual desert, and that's where we are and have been, really, from the time that we were added to God's church as true Christians. So unlike our forefathers, Israel of old, we are to learn what they failed to learn in their arduous journey across the physical desert to the promised land, for they soon forgot. They forgot what these same days, the days of unleavened bread they had observed, were designed to teach them. Subject today is lessons to be learned from the days of unleavened bread. Lessons to be learned from the days of unleavened bread. When we consider the duality, as we should, we are to learn from reading about them in the Holy Bible the lessons they failed to learn. Obedience, faith, and trust in the living God through whatever kind of trial and test they were to undergo from the time they departed from the land of bondage, as it would be with us from the time we were baptized, to their entrance into the promised land and ours into the kingdom of God. It's an arduous, hard time, very trying time that we go through in all these tests and trials. In addition to removing the leavening, a major lesson learned while eating the unleavened bread and products during these 7 days is also vigilance. You've always got to be on your toes. It's so easy for things to come in at us without our thinking about it, without really thinking about it, without putting our mind into gear before the mouth speaks, Be very careful of not slipping up and finding ourselves eating leavened products, which is a type of sin. Leavening is poison to us during these 7 days. And the primary major poison affecting God's people today is the very thing that Jesus warned his disciples about that also applies to us today, and that is the yeast of false doctrine. The yeast of false doctrine. Jesus said in Matthew, the 16th chapter, verses 6 and 12, "Then Jesus said to them," that is, to his disciples, "take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of bread, but of the doctrine of Pharisees and Sadducees. And again, like I was saying a little earlier, they have a way of sort of slipping in on you. Now, some months ago, I had a fellow to write me, and he wanted to know, he had a question about, what was it about? When, I think, Mr. Armstrong went on the radio station in Luxembourg, or wanted the exact date or something. I can't remember fully now. It was very subtle in the beginning. He was a person very sincere this morning, and I tried to help him a little bit. And so finally it came to the point I realized where he was going, and I said, "Hey, look, I can't help you anymore. It would appear to me that what you're doing, you're trying to destroy the use of Mr. Armstrong that God used him to do." Well, about 3 months, I never heard from him. Then the other day, I got a note from him. Man, it was a bad note. Called me a liar, and I don't know what all. But that's the way it is. See, it's so subtle in the beginning, and then it comes out, bang, 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 and stomp you into the ground. But that's the way Satan will work. He comes in so subtly. And people like that over the years in regard to demonism, what the demons do to them, and the fact that they will begin to talk to them about something or tell them something is going to happen, and it happens. So they say, "Hey, this is great. This is truly something that's really wonderful. Now I'm above these other people. I know what's going to be taking place." Then pretty soon they're leading you off in the wrong direction, and pretty soon they're going to take you over, and like the man in San Diego, trying to get away from them, jumped off the tallest building in San Diego and committed suicide. It was the only way he could get free himself from them. We have to be vigilant. Satan has so many ways to come at us. Remember, he was the greatest of God's creation. And we can see that from the point of view of the prince of the power of the air and how he affects this whole world. He affects all human beings. He's got them all blinded. And this is what Satan wants to do with us. And that's why Jesus said, take heed and beware of the leaven or the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of bread, but of the doctrine, of the doctrinal teachings of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. I'm writing an article in the personal of the editor, and one of the things I was working with a little bit this morning, you know, all these corporate churches out there, they are afraid of Mr. Armstrong. They're afraid of him. That's why they won't speak of him in a positive way. They won't speak of him as the use that God used him for. They're afraid of him because if they do, then they're going to have people leaving them. And if people sit there and begin to swear, you know, I don't want to hear this, you know, and they're out of there. And they're afraid of losing income. They're afraid of it. Even the EIM doesn't play any of Mr. Armstrong's tapes anymore. Hardly ever even speak of him. That's how it goes. Gradually works its way through. Beware of the doctrinal teachings. And yet all these people, they're off in one way or the other. Then we have the yeast of hypocrisy. Luke, the 12th chapter, verses 1 and 2. Luke 12, verses 1 and 2. He began to say to his disciples, beware of the leaven, the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Duplicity, people who speak out of both sides of their mouth with a porky tongue, as the Indians used to say, I guess. That's what a snake has, isn't it? Some of those snakes have a porky tongue. That reminds me, the other day we were in Lodi at a pet store, and Peggy was in. I stayed in the car. And I happened to look over in the direction, and I saw this fellow, and he had this great big old boa constrictor. That thing was that big around and wrapped around him. And Peggy didn't see him until she was right inside next to the guy. She says, see this thing, you know. It was his pet. Said he had to take it out every 3 days or the pet wouldn't remember who he was. I said, you know, some of these days that snake is allowed to kill him and to swallow him. You know how they do? They tie their tail one end and then they begin to stretch you out. And they just stretch until the bones are all separated from the flesh and they make you small enough that they can go ahead and begin to swallow you. What a horrible death. I can't understand people like that. I think there's something wrong up here to have pets like that. Well, anyway. Earlier, Jesus Christ had warned his disciples of the many false ministers Satan would and is now using to try and destroy us. And it's hard for us to really grasp that these people out there that always pastored us and they were papal at the time, because really what? They were fearful of Mr. Armstrong and the loss of their income. And yet some of them didn't believe right. Like Dr. Zimmerman, I heard him give a sermon in which he said, well, about born again, he said, I always believed that. He said, I guess I was ahead of my time. And yet he was ahead of the letter answering department. But he didn't understand anything about it, like Dr. Stravinides in regard to the Trinity. Well, I always believed that, but he said, well, why didn't you teach? He said, because Mr. Armstrong wouldn't let me. But now I can. You see how they come in among us? It's hard for us to realize those things, that they could happen to some of the people that we've known and were such forceful speakers, good speakers. And yet they went south. Jesus said in Matthew the 7th chapter, verses 15 through 23, Matthew 7, verses 15 through 23. All right, coming here, 15th chapter. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing. Who come to you in sheep's clothing, Well, hold your fingers here just a little bit, right where it is. I didn't have this in my notes, but I'm going to turn there anyway, in 2 Corinthians, 11th chapter. 2 Corinthians, 11th chapter, where Paul amplified this. He added to it what Jesus had said. And get over here, finally get here, 2nd chapter, the 11th chapter, 2 Corinthians. And picking up with verse 12, "For such a false apostle," Paul wrote, "deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ." And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. The Companion Bible and their writings, and I can see they're very possibly they could be correct. Whereas they said that Satan really didn't appear. You know, Satan is a serpent, but didn't really appear as a serpent to Adam and Eve, but as an angel of light, which would have made it much easier, perhaps, to do the damage that he did. I can't substantiate that, but it is a thought, and it seemed logical. But going on, "Beware of these false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves." They're going to eat you up. But they won't appear that way right in the beginning, like Jesus said, in sheep's clothing. You think they're okay, they're fine, they speak the same things that we do. Then you find out sometimes too late, no, well, hey, they're taking a detour. They're going in a different direction. They are ravenous wolves. They're going to eat you up. "You will know them by your fruits," or by their fruits, ours as well. "You will know them by their fruits." And that's how you come to know, but you know, you can't always tell what fruits a tree is bearing at the moment, unless you really know your trees. Sometimes it takes a long time to come to know the fruits of a tree are the fruits of an individual. Look at them over the years. GTA, look at all the different ones. "Even so, every good tree," well, here, "you will know them by the fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit." We don't always see that in the beginning. It takes a while. "A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, or can a bad tree bear good fruit?" They may appear to be, but in reality, no. "Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire." That's going to be their end. And Peter talks about that, and Jude speaks about it, as well as the Apostle Paul. "Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. So he adds to it, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. I never gave you my spirit. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. So when we put this into this warning in today's setting, this also means, as I've already been talking about, all the erroneous doctrines coming from a very large hypocritical ministry who had more than 350 plus corporate churches of God. Four or five of them are larger churches, adding up to around 50,000 members. And tragically, the members with them are sleeping in these congregations, placing their trust in the leaders and not in God, not in God's Word. Like a man from Pasadena said, he visited in the David Hume Church. He said, "Those people, they're sleeping. They're just sitting there. They're not really hearing what's being said." You always need to listen to what he said. You need to listen to what I say. And if you catch me saying something wrong, come to me and tell me. And I'll correct it. And anybody who has a God spirit will have to correct whatever they say that is wrong. We can speak out of sincerity and all that and believe what we're right and everything. But maybe for the most part it will be right. But, you know, occasionally we might find where we're wrong and then have to back up. Israel failed to learn the lessons of total obedience, faith, and trust in the eternal in their departure from Egypt and journey across the Sinai Desert. Only 3 days into the wilderness, they were confronted with a need for water, and they began to panic. They began to panic. Exodus, the 15th chapter, verses 22 through 27. Exodus 15. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out from the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness, and they found no water. You know, I can be headed up to a real crisis with about better than 2 million people. And when they came to Marah, which was the Sabbath, it was the 24th day of the month, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter, poisonous. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink? What are we going to do for our little children who are crying for water? What are we going to do for our animals out there? What are we going to do? There's no other water anywhere around here." And so what did God have Moses to do? So Moses cried out to the Eternal, and the Eternal showed him a tree. When he cast it in the waters were made sweet. And then he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them and said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Eternal your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Eternal who heals you." There's some duality to here. Think of the tree in regard to Christ being crucified on. You think about the 70 trees here, the 12 wells of water in regard to the 12 apostles, the 70 palm trees that pictures the 70 disciples that Christ sent out during his ministry to the different villages, preparing the way before him. Here they had just observed the miracle of the Passover, by which their lives were spared from death. Seeing all the Egyptians hearing their mournful cries going up all over the land, such terrible cries of anguish, and realizing their lives had been spared. And then the miracle of leaving the bondage of Egypt after having been in such terrible bondage, and their male children being killed, being thrown into the river. Not a river, drowned. And they went out with a high hand. They were so very happy, very joyful. They were no longer slaves, but it was all too soon forgotten. They departed in the beginning of the days of unleavened bread. They were also eating it, for they did not have time to leaven it before leaving Goshen. Exodus 12, chapter verse 39. Then came the miracle at the Red Sea. You know, we read words, but if you try to picture all this, visualize it in your mind, and you think back and seeing all those people and how that Pharaoh and his army is very, very real to them. And this is something we're going to be confronted with, or all the people will be taken to a place of safety before too terribly much longer. I'll touch on that a little bit later. Then the test crossing the desert. They failed the test miserably each time. As a result, all the original generation perished prior to entering into the promised land, with the exception of two men, Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb, by that Numbers, the 14th chapter, the 12 spies going out and came back with a false report, 10 of them, only Joshua and Caleb gave them the true report and urged them to obey and to do what God had told Moses, that is said to Moses, for them to do. They were accounted worthy because of their loyalty, their steadfast belief and faith in God. So will it be with all of us, for all of us who are so graced by God. So we can ask, is there a duality here of the 100,000 or more who were in worldwide and turned their backs on God and His true teachings, like Jerry was talking about these people that he had known through the years? Worked with them side by side, fulfilling their duties and their responsibilities and having some happy times together. Good fellowship, going out eating together, laughing and talking, all that, and then see, they've gone away. And Jerry, this wife, Jamie, you're still here. The Apostle Paul wrote of the reason they were rejected from entering the promised land in Hebrews, the 3rd chapter, and verse 19. Hebrews 3, verse 19. So we see they could not enter in, that is, the promised land, because of unbelief. Add to that, of course, with that is disobedience, but because of unbelief. So it's going to be in God's new world. Only those who continue to believe and trust O God and trust God will enter, be counted worthy. The Apostle Paul wrote to the church of Corinth during these days of unleavened bread and urged the members to learn from the failures of Israel. 1 Corinthians 10, verses 11 and 12. Now all these things happened to them, as we find here in verse 11. All these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So it pays us to go back and read and think about what happened to them or whatever, and see the parallel, and know the same things we're having to learn, or we're going to be rejected as were they. Verse 12, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. We've been blessed all these years, all of us who are here. We're still here. God has graced us. He's enabled us to be here. But we could still fall away. I could. You could. I'd like to hope I never will. And I'm going to do all I can to keep from it happening. And so are you. Always you got to remember, you don't have it made yet. You don't have it made yet. Therefore, to him who thinks he stands, take heed. Take heed. Be cautious. Be concerned. Be careful. Lest we all fall. The Apostle Paul was making the effort of arousing the need of awareness of the subtlety of sin and being caught up in it. In so doing, he used the physical leavening, or leaven, as a type of the continued needed spiritual unleavening process of ourselves throughout our whole lives. Arousing the need of awareness. That's why he cautions here in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. For I fear, lest somehow as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness. You see, by his craftiness. You see how people come at you? You don't realize that it's Satan. Satan's invisible. Some of you are not getting it yet, but I'll tell you the time's coming when you will. He knows who each one of you is, and he's going to come at you in ways you never thought of. That's what he's doing with me now. That's what he's doing with a wife and me. That's what he's doing primarily with me. And I may be writing about that a little bit later, and why and how far back it goes. As the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. That's what happened with Eve. By his craftiness, the simplicity. For if he who comes preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or if you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you may bear with me, as the Apostle Paul said in the Greek, not with them, but with all. Always we're to continue purging out the old leaven, lest it rise up here and there to haunt us. But even so hard as we try, we still slip up, don't we? Here and there we do. We don't do it intentionally. There may be a time you do it without realizing it, but most of the time it's intentional. You don't mean to do it that way. Like I wrote in the pastor's comments about the little boy, and I'll tell you who that was. It was David John Hill, his little son Jonathan. He's going to reach down, he's going to correct him for something. And Jonathan said, "Daddy, I don't mean to do wrong, but I just can't help myself." Okay, I guess that pretty much expresses it for us too, doesn't it? Not. Yeah, Jonathan told it like it was. We were going after on a holy day after the services and going into a San Diego hotel. I've forgotten which one it was, but they were having a Masonic meeting there, whatever. All these Masons and whatever. And it was Christmas time. And David John Hill and Jonathan, still a little boy, walking in, and one of them came up to him and said, "Well, Merry Christmas, son." And his son said, "Well, we don't." David John Hill slapped your hand over his mouth. Stopped him right there. He was going to tell him. That's what my little granddaughter, her sister, Acacia, we were walking down the hill, and she was on the den by here. Lived with us long enough to know we didn't observe Christmas. And one of my neighbors happened to drop by, and he stopped in a moment. He said, "Well, I hope you haven't had your Christmas." And she said, "Christmas is an abomination." He didn't know what to say. Out of the mouths of babes. We who are adults are afraid to say, but the mouths of babes, it just comes out like it is. Yeah, again, it can be so subtle without realizing it. Then we find ourselves having re-entered its deadly traps and again leavened by sin. We must realize Jesus Christ has made us a new lump after having been leavened. Due to Christ, our Passover, having been crucified for each one of us. Christ, through the Apostle Paul, admonishes his people in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, "Therefore purge out the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, the way that we used to be." The way that we used to be. We don't walk that way anymore. One of the hardest things, I guess, when God added me to the church, when he bringing me to conversion, I was really into watching boxing, professional boxing all the time. I was watching it Thursday night and whenever else. And then to try to begin to break myself away from that, which I did. Today I can't stand it. I haven't been able to for years. I just flip right across. I don't even want to see anything about it. But it takes a little time to get some of those things out of us that once was attractive to us. "Purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened. For indeed, Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us." So unless one is very diligent and watchful, it can be real easy to fall in the same trap of the lack of obedience, faith, and belief in God as our deliverer from all evil. And God doesn't always do it immediately. Like with Israel going across the desert, he didn't always intervene at the moment. It was all more or less right at the last moment. Think about that in regard to Samuel. You go back to 1 Samuel, I think, about the 14th chapter or so, where Saul was told to wait 7 days for Samuel. And he waited the allotted time, I guess right into the 7th day, and Samuel hadn't shown. Then he did something he should have never done. That was offering the sacrifices. He didn't have the right to do that. And Samuel came right up, apparently right in the closing part of the seventh day, and told him because he had done that, that he was found to not be worthy of the kingship by God. Though most of our trials are different than was theirs, the lessons of obedient faith, belief, and total trust in God are exactly the same in our lives as Christians as they were in their lives. Since the physical is a type of the spiritual, the Apostle Paul wrote this grave warning that the same failures of Israel can also happen to us unless we are diligently aware of our humanity and struggling to stay on top of it. Proverbs 16, verse 25, there is a way, and it's also in the 12th chapter. Two times this is mentioned. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And that's something you have to work with, too, because so often it seems that things are right to us, and you have to think your way through it to determine whether or not it is the right thing to do. But its end is the way of death. And we have to think of ourselves as we were and still are to a degree, that we have to watch ourselves in Jeremiah 17, chapter 9, verses 9 and 10 and 13. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? I, the Eternal, search the heart. I test the mind. Notice that? I search the heart. I test the mind. Even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. Then Jeremiah said, O Eternal, the hope of Israel, all who forsake you shall be ashamed. Those who depart from me, as God goes on, shall be written in the earth because they have forsaken the Eternal, the fountain of living waters. Fountain of living waters. Wasn't it Ponce de Leon, famous Spaniard that was searching for the fountain of youth in this country? Was it Ponce de Leon? Yeah, okay. Thought it was. He never found it, did he? He didn't know the right source. To fulfill the duality between physical Israel and spiritual Israel, excuse me, God's church, physical Israel had to start out of Egypt, which is a type of sin on their own power, as did we after having been drawn by God and added to his church in John, the 6th chapter and verse 44. During the night of the last day of the unleavened bread, they were baptized in the Red Sea. And I guess maybe we don't think about that all too often. They were baptized in the Red Sea as they entered into it and came out on the other side. 1 Corinthians 10, excuse me, verses 10, chapter 10, verses 1 through 4. Moreover, excuse me, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud, where the angel of the Eternal was, all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses. Now, if you remember, Moses was a type of God. Aaron was his prophet. You remember that? Now, you can find that in Exodus, the 4th chapter, in verse 16. If you want to put it in your notes, you can look it up later. Exodus 4, verse 16. To the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, the manna. All drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. And think of the duality of today, of 100,000 people or more. That doesn't mean they're totally lost, forever lost, no. But a lost is for us, unless God chooses to bring someone to repentance, lost until the great white throne resurrection, which time they will be raised. they'll be given that opportunity for eternal life, one that they never had in this life. They thought they did, but they didn't. Thank you, Jack. You put anything in? Give me a little pep here. It's extremely rare I ever drink water, unless I know it's something. Now I backtrack on that one. Now these things became our examples in verse 6. These things became our examples. See, here again you have the physical, which is a type of the spiritual. Type of the spiritual. We were also baptized, received God's Holy Spirit, a begettal, which they did not receive. God's Spirit was with them, but not in them, in the way it is with us. So as God's Spirit was with all those people with us, He used them, but it would never really came to be a part of their lives in the way that it has been with us. So 1 Corinthians 10, verse 5, let's see, I read that already. So do the same nature in us as was in Israel of old. Unlike physical Israel, during the years that have followed in our lives, we've had to cry out to God over and over again, and I've had to, I don't know how many times over there. 50-some-odd years, God has graced me to be in this church. I have wept, I've fasted, crying out to God over and over again for the help needed from Him to remain in this wonderful way of life and trust. And that's how I trust all of you that have done the same thing. And also to supply our needs. Thankfully, He has responded each and every time, maybe not as quickly as we would have liked. Sometimes God has done it immediately. And I've seen that. I prayed for some people, and they were just healed like that. And others were not. But it did come. Sooner or later, it would come. Like Mr. Armstrong in Big Sandy, Texas, said he, during the feast, was the feast of the Passover. Anyway, they brought some woman to him that was demon-possessed from New Mexico. And he told the demon to come. She said, "What do you want with me, judge?" She knew, it was a demon. She knew he was going to be a judge of her. "What do you want with me, judge?" He told the demon to come out, but, it didn't believe, as I understand, until she got back home. So sometimes it's maybe a little bit, but it takes place. Other times, it would happen immediately. I stood outside the building where they were. I knew what was going on down there when I was told about it a little later. The tests are not over. There's coming a time when God's elect will have to further prove themselves by possibly literally crossing part of the same desert. Part of the same desert on the way to the place of safety from the violence of warfare that's going to be erupting in the Middle East. So I've covered some of these things before with you in part, but I think in this context it's good to go back over them again when we consider the terrible times just ahead of the true church of God. A coming time when it will be made known to us in one way or the other, God will make it known. It's time to leave from this Babylonian system for the place of protection that has been promised by Jesus Christ. Revelation, the 18th chapter, verse 4, where God says, "Come out of her, my people. Come out of this Babylonian system." Now, we're having to live with it for the time being. But see, it's like everything has to be according to God's timetable. It has to happen at the exact time. Precisely the exact time, like it was with the people in Jerusalem in 70 A.D. They could not leave to go to their place of safety in Pella, Jordan, until the exact time. You had Tacitus. You had him coming up from his father before him, who was there in Jerusalem. They couldn't leave then. And then, the emperor was killed in Rome. They went through about two or three of them pretty fast. So they couldn't do anything until then Titus came back with a huge army then to take over Jerusalem, and en route, before they got there, it was a time to leave. And so there was that small window of opportunity for them to leave, and they did. And so otherwise they'd left too soon, there would have been a problem. Had they left a little bit later, there would have been another problem. But they left at the exact time. We have to realize that God has a timetable for everything. We are in the day of scattering of God's people, a time of trying and testing God's people. And we have to realize that. That's what the Bible tells us. If you believe the Bible, that's true. I get a little bit discouraged, too, because we're not showing all that growth. But yet I look at the same time. I look where we are. I know what's happening. I know the time is coming according to God's timetable when God will bring everybody together. I know that. I know we have the truth. That's the one thing I know we do. I know where we're going. I know these things from the bottom of my very being. So I'm not worried. I just wait for God's timetable for the right time for it all begin to happen. And I know it will. We are people of faith. We believe God and know it's going to happen. So the time is coming when God says it's time to get out of here, to leave Babylon. And prophecy indicates all of God's people will leave from wherever they may live at rendezvous in Jerusalem for a brief stay before leaving from there to the place God will have prepared for his people. Jeremiah 51, verse 50. You need to keep this in mind. Jeremiah, it's a little bit here, it's a little bit there, as God tells us in the Bible. Jeremiah 51, verse 50. In these chapters, he tells you about fleeing from Babylon. You who have escaped the sword, leaving just in time before the sword falls, nuclear warfare. You have escaped the sword, get away. Do not stand still. Remember the eternal from afar off, from whatever country you live in. And let Jerusalem come to your mind. Let Jerusalem come to your mind. Oh, why would he say that unless God intends his people to go there first on the first leg of the trip? And we'll touch on why in a moment. But it'll be real hard and trying test. It'll be upon all of us. I hope that I'm still living at the time. If not, there'll be another one, another leader that God will raise up, so he'll be here for you. Maybe Minister Mendiola or whoever it might be. But just as they were with Israel when we have to depart from Jerusalem, this will be during the prophesied times of the ravages of famine and disease epidemics, virtual anarchy, racial wars, persecution. All these things are being talked about of late on the media. Persecution, especially in the house of Joseph, meaning Ephraim and Manasseh, just before nuclear warfare falls on the house of Joseph. Israel was tested at the core of their beings while crossing the Red Sea and then the 40 years in the desert. Could there be a duality and meaning of God's elect in going from Jerusalem to possibly Petra? In Matthew, the 24th chapter, verses 15 through 20, Matthew 24, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, now when you see these things standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Now the thing of it is, this did not take place. There was no abomination of desolation set up in the temple in Jerusalem 70 A.D. There was not. But later on, Hadrian, a new emperor, a little bit later on, then he came to the ruins of that, and then he set up the statue then. Now, history will tell you this. I have the history books at home. But it was not done in 70 A.D. This is talking about our time. Then let those who are in Judea, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So here is the second leg of the trip. Be therefore just a brief stay in Jerusalem, to rendezvous there. Then let them, when you see this take place, again, it's precise planning, precise timing. And people will be watching, the leaders will be watching for this. just as they were in Jerusalem in 70 A.D. when they were watching for Titus and watching for this army to come in on them. There were spies out there coming in and reporting what was taking place. As well as undoubtedly, I'd like to think it was God sent Gabriel to tell them the exact time to leave. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And so, again, you can see the exact timing of it, because let him who is on the housetop not even go down to get anything out of his house. It's going to be, that fast. You got to get up and go. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. And woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. So that's something the ladies need to be thinking about in the future, those who are young enough yet to be giving birth to babies. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath day, for then there will be great tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the whole world until this time nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So you can see again, you can see precise timing right through this. God has everything worked out. Everything in his mind, everything that is going to happen at the exact time. It's not going to happen until then in regard to his church and bring this all together, leaving and all of that. There's precise timing. Had to be precise timing in regard to the, well, not say precise, but there had to be a timing of the year that Mr. Armstrong died to fulfill prophecy. For the scattering of the church to take place. But here when you think of Matthew 24th chapter, verse 15, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken up by Daniel the prophet, saying the holy place, whoever should reasonably understand, this can only mean from 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 1 through 4, can only mean the Pope establishing himself as God on his throne in Jerusalem. And then setting up the statue of what they call the Apostle Peter, which is really black in image, Jupiter Olympus. Years ago they said that I guess it still is, but people, at least before they roped off the statue, that people were kissing always the thumb on it, and they said it reduced the size of the thumb because there's so many people kissing this thumb. So some of our group were there in Rome. Charles Dorothy, he wanted to see if that was true, and so he slipped the rope and leaped up there, and they came and grabbed. They just thought he was overzealous. So, he wanted to see if that was true. And boy, he had a lot of courage, a lot of nerve. Otherwise, he could have been put down somewhere down there and joined Simon Magus. The possible implication of Scripture is that it would appear the beast would send an army from Jerusalem prior to the church crossing the Jordan River. Now, will you consider the duality with Revelation 12, which we'll touch on? A duality, your Egyptian spies had reported to Pharaoh where the Israelites were and would be an easy prey, for they were entangled in the wilderness with no way out. You think about that. Now, God's people there and leaving, probably in the middle of the night, just like Joseph and Mary had to flee to Egypt from where they were when God told them they had to get out of there. Because here was Herod sending an army to kill all the boy babies. So again, it was precise timing. So anyway, they had reported to Pharaoh where they were, easy prey. Now you think after crossing the Jordan River, and in addition to that, there are approximately 50 miles from there to Petra. Will it be desert travel, or will it be on the King's Highway? I've traveled on King's Highway, and I guess some of you may have as well. I haven't done the other part. back in 1981. I'd like to consider the possible parallel as to why in Clark Commentary, Volume 1, page 368, God himself brought them into straits which no human power or art could extricate them. By bringing them into such a situation, he took from them all hope of human help. Notice it. He took away from them all hope of human help and gave their adversaries every advantage against them. End quote. You see the kind of a situation they were in, why they were panic-stricken? There'll be a duality again with God's people. There'll be a duality. Revelation 12, chapter, verse 17 tells us that. We'll get to that, maybe. Reading from Exodus, the 14th chapter, verses 10 and 11. When Pharaoh drew nigh, which is the type of Satan, the devil, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. Sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Eternal, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Will that be the kind of a thought that will be coming up in the minds of people at the time in fleeing from Jerusalem to Petra? Seeing such a vast army, fully armed with no weapons of their own, they forgot about God's miracles to deliver them and lost whatever faith they may have had. They fully expected universal destruction unless they were to voluntarily give themselves up to Pharaoh's army and return to the bondage sin of Egypt. Duality. This will also be a real trying test on the elect people of God at very possibly the Jordan River. The leading pastor of God's church will have to assure the members, just like Moses did, not to fear, but realize that God will do for his people then, just as he did at the time of Moses. And I'll read from that, Exodus the 14th chapter, verses 13 and 15, from my notes. Exodus 14, verses 13 through 15. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Eternal, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, the sixth day of the days of unleavened bread, you shall see them again no more forever. The Eternal shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And the Eternal said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Into the watery sea? No. But lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground to the midst of the sea. End quote. From the Compendium, Volume 2, written by Dr. Hay, page 245, and I quote, the miracle was wrought when Moses stretched his rod forth. The sea parted thousands of feet wide. Then the winds came in to drive back the waters and to build them up as a wall on either side. Consider the possible parallel. Exodus 14, verses 19 through 22. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. So he came between the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was cloud and darkness to the one, and he gave light by night, that is the beginning of the seventh day for the unleavened bread, to the other, so that the one did not come near the other all that night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Eternal caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night. A hurricane force wind with the power of a tornado. All that night it made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Now, some of the details of crossing the Red Sea, there are dualities to consider here as well. Josephus mentions a storm of thunder and lightning. Notice this in Psalm 77. Quoting from this, Psalm 77, verses 16 through 18. And let's see, I sit here, 16 to 18. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you, they were afraid. The depths also trembled. The clouds poured out water, just a pouring down rain. The sky sent out a sound. Your arrows, that is, lightning, also flashed about. The voice of your thunder was in a whirlwind. Can you probably never heard thunder like that before. So absolutely loud as to be almost deafening. The lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Earthquakes. Your way was in the sea, your path in the great waters, and your footsteps were not known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. The Red Sea was 8 miles across. From the Compendium, Volume 2, page 243, was 8 miles across and 350 feet deep. You can imagine how high those walls were. Taking a note, quote here from the Experimental Commentary, Volume 1, pages 328, 329. The sea at the point of where the passage must have been much broader than it is at the Suez. For both the Israelites and the Egyptians were on its bare bed at one time. As the Israelites numbered more than 2 million persons besides flocks and herds, they would, of course, to pass but slowly. If the part left dry was broad enough to enable them to cross in a body 1,000 abreast, which would require a space of more than a half a mile in breadth, and is perhaps the largest supposition admissible, still the column would be more than 2,000 persons in depth, in all probability 2 miles. It would have been occupied at least an hour in passing over its own length or in entering the sea, deducting this from the largest time intervening before the Egyptians must have also entered the sea. There will remain only time enough under the circumstances for the body of the Israelites to have passed at the most over 3 or 4 miles. Exodus 14, verses 23-24. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass in the morning watch, the night was divided into 4 watches, our commentary has it around 4 o'clock in the morning, that the Eternal looked down forth upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of cloud and troubled the host of the Egyptians. Now let's go to Revelation, the 12th chapter. The 12th chapter, verses 14 to 16. But the woman was given 2 wings as a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, times and a half a time in the presence of the serpent, 3.5-year period of time. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood, and from other scriptures it shows it's an army, like it was with Pharaoh coming after the Israel of old, so it will be the beast sending out an army after God's people, perhaps better than 7,000 people or more, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood, in other words, to be destroyed. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened his mouth, an earthquake, and swallowed up the flood, this army, which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. So then he turns back on the people of God that are left that weren't accounted worthy to escape, and then brought terrible things upon them in the great tribulation. It took the full 7 days of unleavened bread for Israel to fully leave Egypt. This is a lesson in and of itself for all of us. This will be true of God's chosen people at that time when we consider Israel is called Sodom and Gomorrah, Isaiah the first chapter, and so in Jerusalem, Revelation 11, verse 8. One comment, not until the days of King Saul did Egypt regain their former power. It was so devastating. And the beast and the false prophet will totally lose their power and their lives upon Christ's return to the earth. So once again, it's amazing to read and see through the scriptures of the departure of Israel from the bondage, the sin of Egypt, and to see so many parallels that are identical between Israel of old and spiritual Israel, the church of God. The one was physical and the other spiritual. God will soon be delivering the remnant of the Philadelphia church era from the bondage of sin in modern-day Egypt, Israel, and other countries of this world to a place of refuge from the very severe ravages of the coming famine and disease epidemics before nuclear warfare destroys Israel as a nation. It was a sad comment that I heard recently, or read, I guess it was. Tel Aviv and Israel is trying to push themselves forward as the capital of homosexualism. So you think that Judah is free from the bondage of sin? Though God only gives an overview of what is ahead for the select members of God before and during the departure, it would be well for all of us to realize the times ahead that they're not going to be easy. A great need of developing a close and abiding relationship with our God and Jesus Christ before these terrible things begin to fully take place, because it's only in that way can we continue to look to God and knowing He's going to intervene in time. Regardless of how bad things look, He's going to be there. He promised you what He did with Israel of old. He'll be there in time. See where sin goes. It's always the darkest before dawn. We must learn from the lessons Israel failed to learn in trusting God implicitly with living faith, or we will perish, as did they. Their corpses were strewn all across the desert en route to the promised land due to the rejection of God in all the heavy trials and tests that came upon them. They left Egypt, but still had Egypt in their hearts. God, through His prophet Daniel, makes known we are undergoing tests of all kinds during this time of scattering that are designed to purify us. He further tells us that the wise will understand in Daniel, the 12th chapter, and verse 10. Daniel 12, verse 10. Many shall be purified, made white, and refined. And why it is? Because we have no chief apostle anymore. We're scattered. And people are not really looking to anybody except whatever. In many cases, only the false ones are out there. It's nice to be able to find a little congregation in France, or in Belgium, rather. They're still hanging on to the faith. Their church was split in two by Mr. Carrion's son-in-law, deciding that he was going to connect with Mr. Meredith. And when I was there, they told me the bad things about Mr. Meredith. But yes, I guess, and anyway, he split the church. He took half the people, and of course, his people refused to go. They refused to go. So they connected with us. They checked out EIM, and they found that it wasn't a place they wanted to go. So many shall be purified, made white, and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But notice, but the wise, the elect people of God, the wise, shall understand. Shall understand. So we must, through the help of God, survive whatever trials and tests are yet to come upon us. In so doing, we will be delivered miraculously, as was Israel at that time. We've got to always remember that Satan the devil knows each one of us. He knows your weakness. He knows mine. And he will pray on that weakness. As was said back in the book of Job, that the greatest fear of any person would be the loss of his life. People would do anything to save their life. That's what he said to God. That's why he went after Job. Job didn't know that he was not going to die. But I guess he was brought pretty close to it. But he knows that. And people would struggle not to die. My older brother, of course, he wasn't in the church, but he fought hard against dying. He fought, and he lived a lot longer than he would have otherwise, but his body just finally gave out at him. Satan is here on this earth, and he walks among us, just as he did during the lifetime of Job. We must have on the armor of God, as you find in the Ephesians, the 6th chapter, in order to be able to survive. Revelation 12, verses 9 and 13. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, and his angels were cast out with him. And when the dragon saw he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman, the church. Now, like you, most of you, I didn't live through what took place down in Pasadena in 1979 when the state of California came against the church. Maybe some of you went down there, but I didn't. But that was very real to all those people down there, and realizing there were buses out there with deputy sheriffs waiting to load them on, take them to jail. Hopefully this will be enough to make us think very seriously about ourselves in regard to our relationship with God or the lack of it, and take the needed steps to improve it. If we don't, we will surely perish during the Great Tribulation and possibly die the second death. It's that serious. So what has been given this sermon should be enough to make us aware of the hard times ahead and the need to always be close to God to aid us in purging our sin while continuing all of our lives to be a new loaf unleavened in sincerity and truth. So as Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 5, verses 6 and 8, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So whatever our problems, always, as Amos the 5th chapter and verse 14 tells us, to seek God and not evil, that you may live all of our lives. It takes a lot of work. It's not an easy life for a Christian. To make yourself to get up and go pray when maybe you don't feel like it, or study your Bible and other things in your way, but you make yourself do it because you know that's your life. In order to meet the promises of life, you've got to have a relationship with God. As we sang in a song a little while ago, the psalmist said he got up before daybreak. He got up before daybreak to pray to God. It's not easy to always crawl out of bed and when you're sleepy and tired and know that you've got to do it. Zephaniah, the 2nd chapter of my closing scripture, Zephaniah 2, verses 1 through 3. Gather yourselves together, yes, gather together, O undesirable nation, before the decree is issued or the day passes like chaff, before the Eternal's fierce anger comes upon you, before the day of the Eternal's anger comes upon you. Seek the Eternal, all you meek of the earth. You have upheld his justice. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. It may be he will be hidden in the day of the eternal anger, and that time is much closer than a lot of us would like to think. I thank God for these days. And the lesson from it, we should try to keep in our minds the rest of our lives.